Last week in the Gospel, earlier in this sixth chapter of the Gospel of Mark, we heard that Jesus gathered the disciples around him, and then he sent the 12 out with the same authority that he has to go and to announce this message of the breaking into the kingdom of God, to heal the sick. We were told that they anointed people with oil, they prayed with them to set them free from evil spirits and demons. And now today, we hear of the return of the sent out ones. Sometimes in our English translations, we simply take the word that is there in the Greek language and write it in English letters. And so apostolos is there, but it doesn't have the sense of a title, the ministry of those who were sent out. Later in the church, it would develop that. And so we call the apostles those of the special 12 that Jesus gave with particular abilities and particular place within the church. But here, it's just the sent out ones who now come back. So where are we in the Gospel of Mark? Over the first eight chapters of Mark, this question is just swirling around in the background. Who is he? Who is this man who seems so ordinary in some ways? He seems like an ordinary rabbi gathering first a few. Five was the number of the disciples that a rabbi would originally have. And so Jesus does the same. Peter and James, Andrew, John, and then Matthew are gathered around Jesus. But then he gets a larger group of disciples. So there are things that are like a rabbi and things that are not. He teaches a little like the rabbis would teach, but he kept claiming personal authority. You have heard how it was said, but I say to you. And then there were the extraordinary mighty works that Jesus did, healing the sick, forgiving sins. Even we're told he had authority over the wind and the waves, they obey him. So this question continues to swirl around, and we need to read all of these readings in the first eight chapters of Mark with this thought. Who is he? This is the question that is being explored. And so this particular passage that we have today, we've actually jumped over a section. So last week we read from verses 6 to 13 when the disciples are sent out. And Mark loves what we call the sandwich technique. He starts a story, breaks off and does another story, and then comes back and concludes the first story that he'd begun to tell. And so today we have the conclusion to the story that began last week, but we've jumped over this whole section dealing with John the Baptist. And the question that is first there is King Herod, down in his palace in Jerusalem, is wondering, well, he's heard about Jesus, and he's asking the same question. Who is he? What is he doing? What are the things that he's doing? Who is this man? And he concludes that it's just John the Baptist come back to life. And so then Mark realizes that we don't even know the story of what happened to John. And so he then tells us the story of John, who had criticized King Herod for his strange marriage relationships and all of the ways that he wasn't being a true and authentic shepherd king to Israel. And so John is ultimately put to death. And so we hear this story. And then Jesus, who undoubtedly at this point also hears the story of his friend, his brother, his cousin, his brother in his ministry, his mentor, the one that he'd gone down into the wilderness to be with and to learn from and to share the whole prophetic calling, he's being brutally killed. And so that's the background of this reading. And so when the sent out ones return, they first just gather around Jesus. And that's a good thing, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to focus our lives on Jesus. He's supposed to be at the center of all that we do. So that's good. But then they begin to tell all the things that they did. Jesus had sent them out in his authority to use his name to announce the breaking into the kingdom, not just to take all this upon themselves. And this seems to be the problem that the disciples, these 12, have that thing of, oh, look, it was so amazing what we could do, all of the things that we achieved. And Jesus is like, no, you're supposed to just do it in my name. And so often that's this twist that happens. And so Jesus, realizing partly, I guess, for himself, in his own tiredness, in his own grief, his own sense of just having to process, but also for the others to also be able to find that space, he says, let's go away. Come away to a quiet place, a lonely place, where we can be by ourselves and rest. It's such a crucial part of this rhythm and pattern of our lives. There are times for activities, times for the announcement, but there's also times when we need just to withdraw and to find that space to rest, to find that life again. And Jesus needed it for himself. He certainly knew that the 12 also needed that time in that life, in this point in their life, to be able to withdraw and find that space. What happens? They get in the boat. They start heading across to the other side of the lake. And everyone else obviously knew this favorite place that Jesus loved to go to. And so they're like, I know where it is. Let's go. And so this huge crowd of people begin to make their way. And so when Jesus, perhaps the wind is against him as they're crossing across the lake on this particular day, and so it's a bit of a struggle to get there quickly. And so when they arrive on the other shore, who is there but this huge crowd of people? And we're told that Jesus has compassion on them. It's certainly not what he would be feeling. He would have just the tiredness. We already know the grief that he would be experiencing, all of the sense of loss and just finding that space to process. And, you know, I'm sure there have been times in your own life when you've known that need to get away, just to find that space, and then suddenly something has interrupted you. Something has just got in the way of that. And just remember what you were feeling at that time. Were you full of joy and delight and just feeling compassion for the people that got in your way of needing that personal space to process? Maybe you were, but I know in my own life that that's the last thing that I'm feeling. I'm just like, oh my God. And so Jesus, though, shows us the way to a different response. And this compassion that he feels, the Jerusalem just translates it as pity, but it's so much more than that. I've got the Greek word up there, esplenistai, and it's the sense of feeling something in the very depths of who we are, in our bowels, as it were, in the very gut, that seat of all of those things, you know, when we feel things and experience things at such a profound level. And that's what Jesus feels. From the Latin, we get it compassio, to suffer with, or to experience with the other person who's going through this, not just as a detached kind of observation or experience, but moving into the very depths of what someone else is feeling. And that's what Jesus has in this situation, to have compassion on this crowd. Because why? They were like sheep without a shepherd. We heard two of the very famous passages about sheep and shepherds from the Hebrew scriptures. Of course, there are so many. It punctuates a number of the Psalms. It punctuates even the experience of the Torah, let alone the experience of King David as the shepherd king, who demonstrates what it is to have a heart directly moved by the power of God's love. And so this call that Jesus has for us, you know, that sense that we need to experience that as well. There are times when we are like sheep, you know, that we go astray, that we haven't got a clue what we're doing. And Jesus will simply, at those times, have the same compassion on us. But it's also for us to cultivate that compassion within our own lives, to experience the compassion of the Lord, so that we can then have compassion on those around us. This movement as we gather in the Eucharist. That's why the table of the Lord is always there, that we gather around us, his people, like the disciples gathered around Jesus, in order that we can be fed and nourished by the Lord. This passage moves directly into the feeding of the 5,000, the only story that we have in all four of the Gospels, the only miracle that is recounted across each of the different accounts of Jesus. And we'll continue next week, or for the next 5 weeks, we'll be reading from the Gospel of John and his account of this incredible day, this incredible events, and all the implications for it. But for us, we gather to be fed and nourished by the Lord in order that we can also have compassion on those around us. So let's really pray that we will take that space this week. We'll find that space this week to go away to this place where we can experience that compassion of God, that we can be nourished and nurtured by Him in order that we can then pray for those around us, that we can move towards those around us who also need that sense of compassion, and we can feed them and we can nourish them and we can offer them all that they need, that they might also come to life in God.